Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
What a trip we've taken this season. We've been to China, Provence, Bordeaux, South Africa, Tasmania. Of course, it only makes sense that we finish up in Paris. For the final episode of this season of Wine School Dropout, we speak with friend and studio mate, Satanya Dakers of the Dinner for One podcast. Now, Satanya isn't a wine professional or in the industry at all. She's actually the type of consumer we created this show for. With episodes from season one like Wine Language and Finding Your Wine Yoda, we wanted you, our listeners, to be able to gain practical knowledge from each episode that you could take with you and use right away. Satanya is all about cooking, and she makes amazing dishes in her kitchen, all with fresh ingredients from local butchers, fromageries, and green grocers. But how is she when she talks to the French caviste? Well, take a listen. Well, hello, Satanya Dakers. How are you?
Hi, Tanisha Townsend. You're doing very well. Thank you.
I had to turn on my formal voice. This is my podcast voice. I had to get the people ready. So, Satanya is not a wine person, so to speak, as a lot of the other guests we've had this season. But Satanya is a fellow woman, lives in Paris. She's a sister. And she's also has a podcast on the network that I'm on, Studio Ochenta. And she's the host of Dinner for One. Tell us a little about Dinner for One.
Dinner for One is a podcast about the healing power of food. What does that mean? It's pretty much like an audio exploration of what happens when the Paris fantasy ends and real life begins. So my Paris fantasy was I met a French man in New York City, where I'm from, fell in love, got married, moved to Paris, but then the fantasy ended when we got divorced. So I found myself cooking dinner for one again and trying to redefine my identity and how I was going to create a new life here in Paris. And from that experience, my podcast was born, where I just like give the other side of what the expat experience can be, because you can meet someone and, fall in love and move here and stay with them forever. And that's great. But there is also another narrative around that American in Paris story. And I just wanted to show that there's some Americans here, just like, whether they came with someone or for someone or not, there's so many Americans here just kind of like doing their thing by themselves and trying to figure it out, you know?
Thugging it out on our own.
Yeah.
Working, dreaming, living, whatever. You mentioned the fantasy of Paris. What do you think? Where do you think this comes from? Do you think it's just movies, people talking? Where do you think this whole fantasy of Paris comes from?
I think it's both, right? From a cultural aspect, you have movies. And then also not even just movies, but a lot of artists, a lot of writers, in particular for Black people, Black Americans. You know, we have our Josephine Bakers, our James Baldwins, our Richard Wrights, our Nancy Holloways, all of these Black people that left the U.S. in mid-20th century. They left the U.S. at various points, and they found that it was easier for them to live as Black people in Paris. This is a story that's constantly told, and it's something that it's a part of the, I think, at least the Black American psyche. Like, if I move to France, if I move to Paris, there's a lot of things that I have to deal with in American society that I won't have to deal with here, which I think is false, especially not living here. I think the thing about being American in Paris, Black American in Paris, is that you kind of experience secondary white privilege. So the fact that you're a Black American gives you a certain leeway within society. And especially, I don't, at least in my experience, a lot of my friends here are white, whether French or otherwise. And because a lot of my circle is like that, I just tend to feel like there's a bit more welcome, there's a bit more leeway, there's a bit more acceptance. Whereas if I'm by myself and I go into certain stores or go into certain restaurants, the energy and atmosphere is very different. But I wouldn't have known that if I wasn't living here, you know, if I had just gone by what I saw in movies, what people told me when they visited it for 2 weeks, I wouldn't have seen that. But then the other part of the fantasy that's, how do I say this? The other side of Paris that people don't talk about, that I think is actually a good thing that I've come to appreciate and love since being here and living here, it's the relationships you build with French people, or Parisians rather, because most of my French friends are Parisians. They're extremely loyal, and it takes a while to get to know them. But once you do, like, they never let you go. Even if you want to go, they're not letting you go. And I really appreciate that. And that's something that you wouldn't know unless you've lived here. And, you know, because you're not going to make friends with a Parisian if you're here for 2 weeks, even 6 months, even a year. It really takes time.
I was going to say even a year. I'm still working on that Parisian-French friendship thing. We're getting there. It's been 6 years.
It takes a while to develop it. I feel like I went on a tangent. But yeah, bring it back. The fantasy comes from, I think, movies. As Black Americans, our kind of like own special history with Paris, or the stories that have been told from, like, you know, Black American cultural icons. And also, I mean, the city also perpetuates it, right? I mean, Paris is a huge brand and they have a huge marketing department around it. So they make sure that that story is told. And there's some truth to it. It is a beautiful city. It's a gorgeous place to live. I mean, in my opinion, I feel like we're living in a museum, essentially.
Like every day, I feel like I live in a museum.
Yes, it's absolutely gorgeous. Yeah, there's certain things about the culture that I still find very charming, like the cafe culture, the boulangerie culture. For me, especially because my whole thing is food, the culture, you know, the reverence that people have around food, the convivialité of French people once you get into their circle. So a lot of things that are great.
Now, you mentioned the cafe life, which I barely remember that, but your love of food and your passion there. Your podcast is about you cooking for yourself. Where did you and when did you develop your passion for cooking?
I've always loved food. And I think growing up in a Jamaican, I'm from the States, but I was born in Jamaica. My family's Jamaican. I moved to the States when I was 4 years old, to New York City when I was 4 years old. But my Jamaican culture is still very much a part of me. So I grew up like around food, and my mom always cooked. We rarely went out to eat. Like, it was always home cooked meals. Whenever it was a family party, it was like one of the first things everyone decided was who's cooking what. You make this better. You make that better. You do that. You do that. So I've always been surrounded by food, and I never had to cook, right? And then when I went to university, when I went to college, I found myself like eating Easy Mac and a lot of like Domino's cheesy bread. Long story short, I moved off campus. I got a townhouse with some friends. I started cooking, but I wasn't that good. And it wasn't until grad school, really, where it was really simple, basic stuff that I was doing for myself and my roommates at the time. And then I moved to Paris. My now ex-husband, he was a better cook than me, so he did most of the cooking. And yeah, it wasn't really until I started when we broke up, and I would cook once in a while, but it wasn't until we broke up and I started cooking for myself that it really become a passion. And I got better with time. And, you know, I found that as my confidence grew in the kitchen, my confidence grew in my life as well. Because for me, being able to cook myself a meal symbolized the fact that I could take care of myself and I could be okay. And I would be okay here on my own. So yeah, the more like ease and elegance with which I moved around the kitchen and, you know, kind of was able to just like think of things to make or just kind of see what's in my cupboard or in my fridge and like, okay, you know, I don't want to go to the supermarket or the market and buy new stuff when I have this stuff, like what can I make from it? The fact that I could improvise in the kitchen, yeah, it just gave me courage and belief that I could be better.
That's interesting that you put it that way, that it gave you confidence and courage. I've never thought of that as far as tying that into cooking and how you feel in the kitchen.
Well, it's one of those things where, like, it's, you know, I think that food, you know, when you invite someone for dinner, for lunch, whatever, when you cook for someone, it's one of the purest forms of showing that you care and showing love or welcoming someone into you in an intimate way, right? Because you're giving them something or you're sharing something that nourishes them, that actually that gives them what they need to just like survive. It's a basic human need, right? Like you cannot survive. I can survive without Zara. I can't survive without food. You know what I mean? So it's a very basic.
Okay. Barely, but yes, we could survive.
It's a very basic need. And everyone, and you know, people, me included, before when I was with my ex-husband, like the only time I'd really cook or like research a recipe or whatever was when we were having people over and like it was a big to do and like I gotta do that, gotta do that. And I, you know, when we broke up, I was just kind of like, why don't I extend that same kind of like love to myself and care to myself? You know, I gotta love myself first before anybody else. And yeah, I did it. I was able to do it through giving myself that basic need.
It's so interesting how I feel like a lot of people think of food and then relate it to more of an emotion. Whereas with wine, I don't necessarily know if people describe it as an emotion often. Like, I don't think if somebody's like, oh, well, how does this wine make you feel? Or do you feel confident and strong? And I'm like, I mean, maybe if I drink a lot of it, I feel more interesting. I don't know if I might not, maybe I shouldn't say this on record, but
maybe because with cooking, like you do it.
Yeah. You actually,
wine, I don't make wine. I mean, right. I would, if I, you know, who knows, you know, like maybe my life will lead me to someday making wine. I doubt it, but like, you know, and anyone can cook. I'm sorry. I think anyone can cook. Not everyone can be a chef.
Yeah.
Not anyone would feel comfortable making a Thanksgiving dinner, but with enough practice and enough trying, you can make yourself a roasted chicken. It's easy. You can make yourself mashed potatoes. You can make yourself fried rice, you know? And it doesn't take that long. Whereas wine, you know, there's a real science behind it. And no, I mean, because you can't just, I don't know much about wine, but I believe that you can't just be like an amateur winemaker. Like you really have to, you can't just go in like.
I mean, you can be an amateur winemaker. Your wine will be trash probably.
Yeah, no one's going to drink it. Whereas you can be an amateur home cook and, you know, be able to make your own pesto and your friends come over for lunch. You're like, oh my God, this is so good. And you feel so proud. You know what I mean? So I think the level of expertise needed to do both is what makes people have this more of an emotional attachment to cooking versus wine.
Speaking of wine, and since you do live in Paris, did you have kind of a love or any kind of feeling toward wine before, or did that come once you came to France?
Oh my God, I was a typical American that knew jack shit about wine before I moved here. I was, and not even wine, just champagne. I was drinking André champagne. I thought I was so cool, me and my girlfriends. I used to drink, what is it called? Yellowtail. Oh my God. Me and my girls would get a yellowtail on a Friday when I was like 21, 22, and you could tell us nothing. I knew absolutely jack shit about wine. And I will never forget, well, it wasn't even my first trip here. It was my first solo trip here to see my now ex-husband. And we went to this bistro. He took me to this bistro like on Left Bank. It was very like, I thought I was in a movie, right? Like it was like a very like quintessential Parisian, like zigzag cobblestone tiny little bistro, like tiled floors, like waiters in black and white, like I like round, small round tables. I was like, where am I? And he ordered, I want to say it was a Cote de Rome, and it was like, I'd never tasted a spicy, smooth red wine before. And then we had steak frites. And then like with the steak, I mean, I could have died right then and there. And then it was like really in that moment. And then visiting, you know, while we were dating, visiting, the more I came to Paris and started drinking more, I became just kind of a bit more aware. But it wasn't until moving here and then becoming friends with people in the industry, in the food industry, where I really began to get a better understanding of what I like and the type of wines that I like, the regions I like, the being able to talk about whether, you know, if a wine is like structured or like mineral or like, you know what I mean? More than being like, I like white.
Right. Is that like a cold one?
Yeah, I like it real cold. And it's also so impressive when you're with around friend people because they all know like the basics of wine. Like obviously there's a certain level of expertise, but your average friend person can go into a wine shop and be like, okay, I really like white wines from La Loire, that are like vif et pas trop minéralisé, mais un peu côté floral quand même. You are some average, you know.
Right, and you're just like, I had a Riesling with dinner last night, and I kind of want another one.
Yeah, exactly.
So, it had like a little zing at the end, but.
Also, just not being afraid to ask. Mm-hmm. Like, I think also a lot of Americans, generalizing, but I feel like a lot of Americans probably come to Paris and you walk into a cheese shop, you're so overwhelmed. You walk into a wine shop, you're so overwhelmed. You're also a bit like embarrassed because so many French people are in there with authority asking for what they want. But like, you have to remember, they grew up like this. We didn't grow up, most Americans I know at least, didn't grow up like having a fromagerie down the street from them.
No, they didn't. Right?
So they already have a basic knowledge that we don't. And, you know, if you're in a place where someone speaks English, I mean, take advantage of their knowledge and get a better understanding of like what you want to eat. You know, make sure that like you get a lot of pleasure from what you buy, you know, what you're consuming.
Yeah, confidence, I think, in wine, you mentioned confidence in the kitchen. I think with wine, it comes into being able to go into a caviste and ask for what you want and get it, to be able to describe a wine, a region, a grape, something that you want. And they're like, oh, okay, yeah. Maybe you'll like this one or try this. That's when you're like, yes, I'm confident I can do it. Because that is so intimidating, not knowing the words, like how you just went through that, you know, what you say when you go in, people are like, I don't know those words in English. So I definitely don't know them in French. Yeah. How do I do this? And so that's why we have Wine School Dropout, just for a little
bit. That's why we have Wine School Dropout. And also, I mean, for the people that live here, you know, if you're in Paris for a week or two, like it's going to be hard. But if you're here for any period of time, whether it's a month and beyond, I think it's also good to just get to know your caviste. And because I think a part of the pleasure in Paris around like the type of food you eat, the kind of wine you drink is getting to know the people that are selling that to you, because you, number one, it forms a sense of community, which is important here. And number two, they know what you like, they learn what you like. So you might go in one day for your normal like Cote de Rhone that you get, and your caviste, he or she might be like, actually, Tanisha, I know you love this Cote de Rhone, you come in every Friday at 4:30, I know what you're getting, but I just got this Burgundy and I love it. And it's similar to the Cote d'Ivoire in this way, so you should try it. And either they make you try it right there, or they persuade you to buy the bottle and you buy it and you love it. And if either you love it or you don't. If you don't love it, you can say, you know what? I actually didn't like it. That's what you gave me. It was nice, but it wasn't my thing. I prefer my Cote d'Ivoire. And they're not going to be offended. They're just going to keep that in mind for the next time, you know, you go.
Absolutely.
I've discovered so many delicious wines actually that way, by going to the caviste across the street from me. I feel like I'm banned from there now because of that.
But I feel like that's so important what you just said about knowing and developing a relationship with the caviste. Because here, because of exactly what you said, they will get to know your taste. Mm-hmm. They'll know what you drink, what you come in and buy. Mm-hmm. They can let you know when they have something that is similar to it, something else you might like. And just that sense of community thing is so important. They're like, oh, well, you know, we're having a tasting or we're having a private sale. They let you know about all these different things. I have a few cavistes in different neighborhoods that I enjoy. I'm looking for one in my immediate neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And it's so much, I won't say easier, but you can develop a community at a caviste instead of going to the supermarket. You're not developing a community there. Or even if you go to some of the chain shops, they're fine if you know exactly what you want. You want to pop in and get something quick for a party or something like that. But your, you know, everyday kind of thing, I'm really big on caviste and wine shops for sure.
Yeah. Caviste, and I love going to the butcher, and I love, you know, going to the fromagerie. And yes, if you'd go on a Saturday, it takes a bit more time because you have to go from each shop. it's also part of the experience, I think, of, you know, you get the freshest ingredients, then yeah, you build that community. And now I go to the fromagerie and they're like, mind you, I've been here almost 8 years now. I'm still like La Petite Americaine.
I know you can't be here in Paris right now, but how about a virtual French wine tasting? Take a one-hour tour de France with Girl Meets Glass and hear about current life in Paris as we talk about the famed wine regions of France and taste a few wines together. For purchase, visit the website www.girlmeetsglass.com and select Work with Girl Meets Glass.
Do you have a go-to wine, like something that you always order that you're tried and true, or something that you keep in the house all the time?
A go-to wine. Well, in red, that would be a Côte d'Aron for sure. Right. And in white, the Pique Saint-Loup.
Oh, okay. No.
Right? It's a bit basic. But I like, I like Pique Saint-Loup, and I also really love a good Sancerre.
Okay.
Love.
See, you lost me on that one. I don't like Sauvignon Blanc. Wow. And people are like, you don't. I'm like, no, and my palate is fine. There are 7 trillion other wines. It's fine.
Why don't you like
I don't know, just the herbalness, the citrusy notes of it.
Fair.
I like things that are acidic and, you know, have minerality, but that citrus.
I also do like a good Chablis, which I like the buttery kind of like, just like thickness of it. I really like that. I definitely drink more white wines than reds. I can't drink reds anymore. I used to be only a red wine drinker, but I don't know, something about with age, I guess. I drink 2 glasses and I'm like falling asleep.
Red wine does make you sleep.
Yeah, I just can't, drink it the way I used to like a couple years ago. And then in rosés, I don't really have a favorite. I mean, I guess, are there tons of variations of rosés?
I feel, what color I want. Light pink, salmon pink.
I just go with what my French friends say, that like the lighter the pink, the better the quality, and the less like, you know, kind of like hungover you'll be if you just are a bit excessive with it. So I just go for like the lightest, clearest pink possible. But with white wines, I don't know. I tend to like white wines that are all, like you, like minerally, a bit tart.
I love a tart wine.
Yeah, but there's also, but what I would have in my fridge typically would, either be a Pique Saint-Loup or a Chablis, because I just feel like those are, I feel like for the most part, people like them. And they're
everybody can drink that.
Yeah, and they're easy to serve with things. If a friend pops over and we're having apéro or like smoked salmon or anything I put on the table, he or she will be able to, will probably enjoy it, so.
I'm glad you said that. That leads me to my next question. You have guests coming over in 30 minutes. What are you cooking and what are you drinking?
Oh, okay. Well, first I gotta serve myself, right? So I'm gonna make myself a little cocktail.
Okay.
While I'm preparing. My cocktail du moment is Saint-Germain Spritz. So I'll probably make myself a little Saint-Germain Spritz while I'm preparing in the kitchen. The second thing I would take care of is probably just like mettre l'ambiance, as the French say. So like just set up wherever I'm going to put the snacks. And 30 minutes. Okay, so I've done a cocktail, mettre ambiance, that's 10 minutes. Okay, I have 20 minutes left. I will probably do thon piquant, which is like spicy tuna that's sold at Monoprix. That's absolutely, like, everyone loves it. You had it last time, right, Azuri?
Mm-hmm.
It's terrible. Thon piquant, hummus. Maybe I would do some tzatziki sort of thing, because that's quite easy. You can do it yourself. And then just cut up some vegetables. If I have bread here, great. If not, don't be. Put that out. And then, so that's, now I have 10 minutes left. For dinner, I'd probably do some kind of pasta. So I just, if I need to chop some garlic or whatever, I will, you know, prep as much as I can, chop the garlic, chop the onions, chop, you know, the chili peppers. And then when my friends are here, you know, I'm here with them for apéro or whatever, serving them a Chablis or a Pique Saint-Loup or whatever wine I have in the fridge. And while everyone's kind of just like talking and chilling, I'll probably like disappear into the kitchen to put together the pasta.
I love it. So 30 minutes. No, I'm kidding.
All right. This was fun. Tanisha's going to be here in 30 minutes.
Okay. So last question. What food and wine, so give me two, best describes you and or your personality?
Oh, wine. I don't know. Honestly, I think, you know, you've known me for a little bit now. I think I'm going to throw that one back on you. Yeah, because I don't know. But food, I would say I'm like a roasted chicken.
Okay.
I am familiar and comforting while staying juicy and surprising.
Okay.
You never know. You never know. You'll never be, I say comforting because you'll never be like, the surprise will never be bad, right?
Mm-hmm.
And familiar because I'm very much an authentic person. The older I get, the more I live my true self with everyone, no matter who is in front of me, right? But surprising because I'm still a human being. So I learn, I change, I grow, but the foundation stays the same. And it's like roasted chicken. The foundation is the same. If you have a good chicken, you put salt, pepper, olive oil, but you can make it surprising, add your twist with the different seasonings. You put maybe it's more paprika, maybe it's more curry, maybe you want more like herbal, so you put more rosemary and more of that, but it still remains familiar and comforting and juicy.
Which leads me into the wine that I'll use to describe you.
Yeah.
The juicy part, it doesn't go with the chicken though. What I thought of you is Northern Rhone. A red wine, Syrah, so from Crow's Hermitage.
Okay.
And I thought of that because it's juicy in flavor. You get ripe fruit from there. And it is comforting. It warms you up on the inside. You can also get like a little smoky tobacco note. And then that makes me think of your voice is so comforting. And it, you think lounge and smoking and, you know, you're talking to the microphone and that kind of thing. But then also on the finish, you get spice. And you're spicy. I don't think every people don't know that about you, but it's a little, you know, spicy two piece in there. So
spicy.
You know, so I would say for you, oh yeah, Crow's Hermitage.
Okay, I'm gonna write that down.
That's who you are.
Next time I go to Lambert, my cavis to see Guillaume, I'm gonna ask him for that.
Have your mind blown.
Hermitage. Okay.
Yes. Well, thank you very much for sitting with me and talking and all of this stuff. Please tell us where we can find you.
You can find me many places on the internet. Just like, you know, Google me. It's 2021, so of course you can find me on Google. And booping and bopping around the 18th. I just launched season 4 with Studio 80. And that first episode of season 4 is available. And I have a couple interviews coming up with other people that, yeah, I think will be fun. I have some French perspectives, like Black French perspectives, which should be nice.
That'd be good.
And then also like really cool, like an English friend of mine is on it. And then I have a Ghanaian woman that lives in New York. That's really cool. And also my best friend from home.
But yeah, find Sitania on Instagram, her website.
Yeah.
Listen to her podcast. Please support her and then things she's doing. She's fantastic. And I enjoyed our conversation. And I know you all, the listeners, will too. And you will enjoy her content and learn something.
Thank you so much for having me, Tanisha. What's up?
Thank you. I know you enjoy hearing from Sitania, so please follow her on Twitter or Instagram. That's dinner4.1. Spell out the one. Or dinner4onepodcast.com. There you have it, everyone. Another great conversation to finish out the season here for Wine School Dropout. Thank you for supporting this season. You can find more information on me, Girl Meets Glass, my virtual wine tastings, my wine guide to Paris, for when you can return, we're waiting for you, on my website, www.girlmeetsglass.com. And of course, follow us on all forms of social media, at Girl Meets Glass and Wine School Dropout. Continue supporting the businesses and entrepreneurs we featured this season by following them on social media and checking out their work as well. To listen to this season again and again,
in its entirety, it's available on ochintapodcast.com/WineSchoolDropout. If you like the show, tell a friend and tell that friend to tell a friend. Until next time, sit back, relax, and have a glass. This podcast was produced by Studio Ochenta, hosted by me, Tanisha Townsend. Our executive producer is Lori Martinez. Our sound editor is Luis Raul Lopez Levi. Our theme was done by Gabriel Dalmaso. Music is by Makai Beats. Our art is by Tiffany DeLune. Follow us at Wine School Dropout on Instagram and check out ochintastudio.com for full transcripts of this and every episode of the show. See you next week.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.